Oh, sinners and choosers, welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe. Thanks so much for being here, for choosing this to be your audio spaceship for the next whatever moment. Some of you may have turned off right as soon as I said audio spaceship, and that's fine. If you've never heard this show before, we talk about religions of our past, religions of our present, if we have them. We make up religions of our future, and we talk about whatever the fuck we mean by spirituality and whether it's applicable, a decent notion, a road to self-righteousness, or whatever. Thank you guys for tuning in this week. Thank you guys for tuning in this year. And I had a great conversation. I can't think of a better way to start off the new year than by sharing this one with you. My guest today is Alex Hooper. He's been on The Roast Battle, Comedy Central. He's been at The Meltdown, New Girl, Hot in Cleveland, all over the place. And he kind of already started his own religion, although I don't think he would want it to be called that, called Crave. And you can check out cravecomedy.com. It's like a comedy show / dance party, art, music, all kinds of really cool shit going on at Crave. You should find out more info at cravecomedy.com. And for just Alex Hooper stuff, go to hoopercomedy.com. A really great guest. Really loved having him on. Really loved talking to him. And I think you're going to love that conversation. It's been a while since I've gotten any kind of update on my deal. So just to let you guys know, at the start of 2017, I've had a lot of conversations on this podcast about what's important to us, about spirituality, about religion. And one of the common things is community, as they say. And I really want to find some kind of community. Now, I don't want to be pinned in any kind of box there ever, really. So we'll see what exactly that entails for me. I'm going to be doing a lot more touring of churches, Shambhala meditation centers, Gnostic shrines. John Podesta might send me an invite to a blood ritual. Who knows? But I'll keep you guys informed of the goings-on. I'm going to also do a lot more reading of books I have. I've got so many fucking books, man. I need to read more than one a quarter. And maybe I'll get some great new insight on enlightenment to share with you. So look out, 2017. If you like this show, chooseyourownreligion.com, Facebook, Stitcher, iTunes, just Google it and put it whatever your platform is. You'll probably find a good thing for it. Leave a rating or review. That would be awesome. So please, everybody, quiet your minds, open your hearts, grab a handful of puppies, and release them in the direction of Alex Hooper.
Allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers? Know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
You know, I just saw Fish for the first time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm very spoiled because my friends took me to the Sunday show and the Halloween show.
Oh, hell yeah. So those are my first. Oh, in Vegas?
Yeah, those were my first two Fish shows. So I'm going to be pretty disappointed whenever I go back.
Wait, do you know how big of a Fish fan I am?
I didn't, but I just noticed that right there.
Massive Fish fan.
Massive. Yeah. Okay, cool. You would fit in well with a lot of my friends then.
Probably.
My girlfriend, I was in San Diego back in May, I believe, when they played the Forum in LA.
Uh-huh.
And so my friends like brought her a ticket and they were like, you're coming with us, Alex, you got to come to it. And I was like, I can't, I'm playing a club in San Diego for the whole weekend.
Uh-huh.
So she goes, and the next day I call her, I'm like, hey, so how was the concert? She goes, oh my God, Alex, it was so good. I was like, what are you doing tonight? She's like, some friends are coming over. I was like, what are you guys doing? They're like, watching the Fish concert from San Diego. And I was like, what do you mean? You just saw him last night? She's like, Alex, you don't get it.
Yeah, you gotta stream it.
I was like, oh, I've lost you forever. You're gone.
Oh, yeah, no, it definitely sounds like I would fit right in. We're rolling, by the way.
Oh, okay.
I just kicked it right off.
Okay, cool.
But no, I'm a huge Fish fan. I actually went a couple times in LA. I've gone with Aaron Lampart, who's been my Fish buddy.
Yeah, I told her that I was going, and she was just so excited for me. She was like, ah, you're crossing over.
Well, Halloween's the best time to see Fish, too.
I know.
Because everybody's in costume, like
Fish in Vegas on Halloween, like, my friends didn't really need to sell me on anything.
Yeah.
And it was one of the things I was like, I showed up, and I'm like, there's 20,000 people here who look exactly like me. Like, why did nobody ever take me to this before?
Yeah, man. It's a great congregation of weirdos.
Oh, it's the best. And I literally like looked at my friends in the middle of the first night. I was like, I love this. I have things to do and I will not become this. Because like you're there and you're like, oh, I could see why people just are like, fuck it.
Yeah,
and I'm just going to follow this around.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially back in the 90s, apparently it was like a bigger thing. You know,
oh, really?
Because, people would follow the dead around for years and years.
Sure.
And then Jerry died in like 95. And so that was a big turning point where then the Fish scene became massive as far as like the touring thing goes.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But it's the same thing because every concert's different. It's just the feeling you get by being... Also,
yeah.
For me, it's like one of the only places I can totally... without self-judgment, just dance as hard as I want to.
Oh, sure. I mean, I do that pretty much anywhere, but I mean, I was really going nuts in there. And I mean, like literally by the end of the Halloween show, I was like, this is the best band on the planet. And all my friends were like, oh God, like, here we go. We've turned another one. They were so proud of themselves.
Well, now, how does it compare to Crave? I want to ask, cause I've never been to Crave.
How does Fish compare? I mean,
not as the band, but as an experience. Cause I mean, for people who are maybe listening and don't know, you put on this thing that's like, is it monthly, every other month?
Like every other month. Let me hear how you describe it, having never been to it. Let me hear what your impressions are, and then I'll tell you.
Well, from what I know, it's a comedy show.
It is a comedy. At its core, it is a comedy show.
Yeah, and then it turns somewhere into like a dance party, a music thing halfway through that lasts all night. It's in a secret location every time.
Correct.
But like, it's only secret in the sense that you have to ask for it. It's not
right.
Like,
no, we're not. We're, not we like, tell you where it is when you like buy a ticket and stuff. Yeah. We don't make you look for it.
Yeah.
We don't hide clues around the city and make you go on a scavenger hunt.
Yeah, but it seems like it has a lot of a crossover with Burning Man, right?
Yeah, it has. It's heavily influenced by Burning Man, which I've actually never been to Burning Man, which surprises everyone that I tell that to. But a few years ago, I just fell heavily into the LA burner community, and they kind of just. They kind of just adopted me in as one of their own, and they, you know, I'll go to Burning Man someday. I think my plan is 2018 to go.
Uh-huh.
I'm just like, I'm afraid of being in the desert for a full week.
Right?
That's terrifying to
me.
It's
awful.
So I'm still getting over that fact. But they basically came in, and all I wanted to do was, two of my favorite things are comedy and dance parties. I love doing comedy, and I love staying out dancing all night with my friends.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, let me just do this. And the first couple were okay, and we were kind of feeling ourselves out. But then one of the guys who was running the space that I was doing it in, who's a big burner, was like, Alex, our community doesn't want a comedy show and a dance party. They want an immersive event. They want something that captures the entire night. So they're not going to this and this. They're going to one thing.
Yeah.
And they will come out and they will embody it and dress up for it and be excited about it. And so then we started theming all of them and writing storylines, and then Crave became like these whole like character pieces, and the stand-up is I write scripts around the stand-up comedians so they don't have to change anything, but we have an overlapping theme and story that plays out throughout the comedy.
Then
we just rage, and we have like, you know, we have live painters and fire spinners and DJs obviously, and like just all kinds of fun things for you to do. And our whole thing is just come and be whatever you want to be. If you don't want to wear a costume, don't worry about it. Do whatever. Just be whoever you want to be, but just know that there's no judgment going on.
Yeah.
We're a community that we don't shake hands, we hug, which by the way, if you're listening, shaking hands is gross. People touch gross things all day. A hug is way more sanitary and feels way better.
That's true. It's true.
Yeah. So that's kind of how Crave now is. It's almost 4 years. December 14th, 2012 was our very first one. So it's been almost 4 years.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so awesome, man. Like, also, I didn't even picture like the fire dancers and the painters and
how. Yeah. But it's if you have something that you want to do, like people hit me up sometimes like, hey, I do this thing. Can I come do it? I'm like, of course you can. Come, like, we want the most interesting group of people and entertainers and artists that we can acquire. So if somebody has something goofy that one time we had sign spinners, like those people that stand on the street and spin signs. We had two guys that were super good at it come in and put on a show doing sign spinning. And it was awesome. Like, just to see, just like, oh yeah, these guys can actually, this is like a talent.
Were they still advertising to like do your taxes and stuff like that?
They were like real estate signs. They asked me, they're like, for an extra $100, we can make it Crave-specific signs. I was like, yeah, that's not in my budget right now. Just grab some whatever signs you want.
But then that can be like a burner type statement in and of itself, like even if whatever it's real estate or anything. Totally. Now, what's so cool is that I don't even think I told you this part when I was like asking you to do this podcast, but like part of like the gimmick of this thing, maybe I did mention it, but part of the gimmick of this is that at the end, for people who don't have a religion, I ask them to make up a religion and we like go through like bullet points of like, you know, what kind of like how do you want it structured, how often you want to meet, where would you worship, things like that. I wasn't even thinking about it till this morning. I'm like, he basically did create his own religion. And at least to me, do you feel that way?
I've never described it as a religion. I describe it as a community.
Yeah.
But we do have like ideals and values that we try to instill on people. Like,
yeah.
We're all about, you know, just sharing and love. And I mean, we really like understanding of and empathy and mainly fun. I mean, we want everybody, the whole point of Crave and the whole point of basically my entire existence I just want everyone to have fun all the time. I've always thrown parties since I was in college. Like I started throwing house parties and stuff. And you know, a lot of people hate throwing parties because it's hard to have fun at your own party because you're constantly worried about things, especially when it's in your house. I mean, it's a nightmare. But you get to give something to everyone, this freedom to everyone else that's there.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. Like, I like that I have a little bit less fun so that everyone else can just throw away their inhibitions and be like, oh, I can do whatever I want here. Great. And I've honestly, like, Crave is like, I was really like, you know, transformed by the burner community and just them really inspiring me to just do whatever I want and be the person whoever I want to be. Mm-hmm. And Crave has definitely transformed other people. Like they've come to it and been like, oh, like this is what I've been looking for. Like I've been looking for these type of people that just will, they're so inspiring. They're just like, the one thing that like people that don't understand Burning Man are like, oh yeah, a bunch of hippies go do drugs in the desert. Like, no, like they do the most creative, brilliant art that has ever existed, basically.
Yeah.
They build it and then just burn it down because it's all temporary and then they'll do it again. You know?
Right. Well, and I think what people maybe don't understand, I mean, I don't even know how you start to describe this to somebody who's like so anti Burning Man or so anti like arts community. I'm not even thinking of like, because there are certain artists and comedians who like shit on Burning Man, but I'm talking about people even outside of them, like normal people, like accountants and like, you know, in accounting firms. Like, and they, like, what I think. Burning Man, I've never been either, but the vibe I get from that and from Crave and things like that is that it's art is about being authentic at the end of the day. It's some kind of authentic expression of yourself,
completely.
Right? And so it's so cool to see all these weird ass beautiful expressions of whatever the fuck with zero judgment on whatever you're expressing.
Yeah, it really like it took a while for me to really just like start wearing whatever I wanted and things like that. And there was a very specific moment this year when I wore leggings for the first time at a music festival and I was like, how the fuck was I wearing jeans for the past 5? Why did nobody tell me? Like, that's what, anytime I try something new and I love it, I'm just like, why? Like fish. I'm like, why did no one tell me?
Wait, can you pitch me on leggings?
Oh my, you have unlimited mobility in them. You have literally unlimited mobility. You are so free in them. They're warm. Uh-huh. I was wearing them in like 35 degree temperatures out in the desert a couple weeks ago, and I was totally fine. And they're just, it feels like, I always go back to the Simpsons quote, like, feels like I'm wearing nothing at all. Nothing at all. Nothing at all. Stupid sexy Flanders. But that's really like, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, I love this.
Yeah.
And so then I started embracing like leggings and just how much fun the patterns are and stuff. And you know, it's just one of those things where it's just like, just try it. And it's going to feel weird at first, but then nobody at these festivals or anything like that is going to judge you. Yeah. If I walk down the street wearing some of my costumes, sure, people are going to judge me.
Right.
But I'm kind of at the point where it's like, who cares?
Yeah.
Like I got to this, I had this really real realization this year, otherwise known as a realization, hence why the word is in there, but that just that like, I can do whatever I want, and as long as I'm not hurting anybody, just who cares? Just do it. Just live the life of the person you want to be, and I'm embracing that more and more, and it's literally made me have the best year ever. In a year where everything is falling to shit, and everyone's like, 2016 is the worst year ever. I've had the greatest year of my life just by being like, yeah, maybe, but you can control what you're doing.
Yeah.
And just kind of just try to inspire people in your own little way.
Totally. That's so cool, man. And something I've noticed, I mean, everybody who's a Facebook friend with you this year can't help but notice is your gratitude post this year.
Yeah.
And that's so cool. I mean, I'll just preface it by saying gratitude is something that the past year, independently of you and like the past year or two, it's something I have picked up on that I need to consciously cultivate and like just on a daily level. Like I don't believe in like classic God or anything, but I still pray sometimes. And when I do pray, I do like Anne Lamott, who's like a hippie Christian author, and her template for praying is basically just like help, thanks, and wow. Like help for things you actually may need help for, and for not for selfish reasons, but for just to help you be a better person type thing.
Yeah.
And being thankful is such a key thing to it sounds circular, but being thankful for what you have, being truly appreciative, because if you don't consciously do it, you don't notice it.
It's really like what happened, why, like, so every day this year, I've talked about a different person in my life and written about them on Facebook and why I think they're such a great person and why I'm glad to have them in my life. Mm-hmm. And it basically happened because last year, I was on Christmas. I did this thing I call Alex's Introspective Christmas, which is when my girlfriend goes home and I'm by myself on Christmas. And I choose to have a day where I am by myself on a day that most people spend with loved ones. I don't usually go back home for it. My family comes out here every once in a while, but I usually don't go home for Christmas because there's just not that much there for me anymore.
Sure, sure.
So I have Christmas by myself. Last year, I decided to take two hits of acid and trip by myself to just remind some every once in a while, like I just trip by myself just to really go deep and explore what are the things I want from, especially at the end of a year. I'm like, what did I get out of this year? What do I want from this next year? And I was just looking at my dogs. Like I have two pugs and we had just adopted one from Korea a few months before. And I just started like crying, thinking like, God, like how could anyone ever hurt you? You little things. Like how could I'm just so lucky that I have you. And then I took him for a walk and talked to a homeless guy for 30 minutes. He was batshit crazy. I pass him almost every day. And I just was like, you know, it's Christmas. Let me stop and talk to this guy. And then I realized, I was walking home from that conversation. And I was just like, I don't have any problems.
Yeah.
Like anytime I think I have a problem, it's not an actual problem. It's a desire that hasn't been manifested yet. Mm-hmm. And if I look at my life that way in 2016, that I don't have real problems because I eat every day and I have shelter and I have friends and I get to do what I want to do. None of these things, I don't ever have a real problem.
Yeah.
I have inconveniences.
Sure.
And that made me look at the whole year differently. And I just saw all these people fighting on Facebook and arguing. And I was like, this is dumb. Like, this is not what I came here for. And this is not what I want to be wrapped up in. I want people to feel good about themselves. And I want people to smile. And I want people to have just as much fun as they possibly can.
Yeah.
And so then they awesome. And I also needed a reason to write every day. That's the biggest thing. My writing has improved. If you look at the first one, it's like, this person's great. They're fun. I like being around them. And then now it's like these woven poems and just
they're great.
Like things. And it's just really, it's just, I needed to write.
And it's cool. I mean, I love the ones, obviously, when it's like people I know and I also appreciate them in the same way. And it's cool to see somebody else vocalize that. But then it's interesting. Some of them I've read, I won't confess I've read all of them. I won't pretend that.
But
there's some where it's like a person I have zero idea who they are. They're not even a comedian. They're not part of the like my community. But then it's interesting just seeing like a vicarious like gratitude in that way is a really interesting thing to see. It's just a, I don't know. And you've always, I've always loved seeing you around open mics and shit in the LA scene because you actually do consistently have like a positive energy and you are committed to that.
I didn't used to. Like, I mean, it took years for me to get here. Like, this is if you didn't know me like a few years ago, like, and you saw me now, you'd be like, okay, what happened to you? Like, what car accident were you in? Were you in the hospital for 3 months? You came out like, I'm always going to be happy for now. Like, it really got to this point where I had a group of friends that support me 100%, like non-comedian friends that just love what I do and support what I do and have just allowed me to learn how to be myself and love myself. And that, and like just having, just getting to finally like have a dog and love a dog, because I never had a good relationship with animals. And when I got my first pug, he instantly just melted me. And I was like, it really made me feel just like, I just feel like I'm a part of such a greater thing now.
Yeah.
And I just want to do the best that I can do while I'm here. Mm-hmm. Like that's all we can do. So when I see people being like a piece of shit or anything, or just like just arguing about things that don't matter, it's like, who cares?
Yeah.
When I see people getting angry that they're in traffic, who cares, man?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's little things like that. Inconveniences are going to happen, but like, I don't know. I just want people to have fun all the time. And that's all I want to do. I just want to have fun all the time.
Yeah. Well, and pugs are great for that too. I don't have an animal. I want a dog so bad. I can't have one in my current apartment, but one day. I had one growing up, and this wasn't as much as, because as a kid, you don't have that much. You're like learning responsibility. You're not really taking care of it. But I think, is it part of it being responsible for another being's happiness and feeling like you're actually, like you're, no matter what happens, you are useful. You are so useful to your little pug's life.
Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. And the other thing is just coming home to something that's just so excited to see you every day.
Yeah.
And that you're like something that just like, there's something to hang out with. And I mean, the thing about the pugs is like, I didn't know. It's like, my girlfriend was like, I really want a dog. And I was like, I don't want a dog. She's like, well, you're not the one who's home by yourself every night, Alex. But like, you're out doing comedy,
right?
I'm the one that's home,
right?
And I was like, fair. She was like, well, what would you want? And I started thinking, I want a dog that makes me laugh, and obviously the funniest dog is a pug. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just the funniest looking dogs. Mm-hmm. Any smush face animal. And so we started looking at them, and my girlfriend realized how sweet they are and how loving they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can't help but laugh at them every day. I can't help but just adore, especially with two, because then they just cuddle together and they just look at me with their stupid fucking faces. And I melt. Like, it just, they're so funny.
That's great. Wait, what are their names?
Kimchi and Carlton.
Kimchi is, I'm guessing Kimchi's the
Korean
one.
She's the Korean
one. Oh, no, Carlton's the Korean one.
Yeah. Carlton's actually from Mexico.
Really?
He spent the first few weeks of his life in Tijuana.
Uh-huh.
And
wait, how did you get a dog from Tijuana and from Korea?
So the Carlton, he was 10 weeks old when we got him. He was found on the side. Someone was selling him out of a box on the side of the road in San Diego. Uh-huh. His first round of shots were in Tijuana, so he was definitely born there or spent some time there. And then the Korean one, there's actually a group called Pug Rescue of Korea. My girlfriend found it while she was looking, and they were looking for fosters. And we'd had Carlton for a year and a half, and we knew we wanted another one. Because it's hard when you leave... When you leave your house for the day and the dog is just looking at you and you know they're going to be by themselves all day, like a part of you is like, oh, God,
I'm sorry.
I don't want to leave. But when you get a second one, you don't feel bad anymore.
Oh,
you're like,
yeah.
Okay, you guys have each other. Have fun.
That's
like,
a good
do
point.
Whatever you're going to do.
Yeah.
And since they're small dogs, it's just as easy to have two as it is to have one. It's like no more work.
Sure,
And it's just like, it's that much. So now my girlfriend and I, like when we're home, we each have one in our lap. Like, it's just, it's great. There's no like, oh, I want to play with him.
Uh-huh. Yeah, my girlfriend, she says if we ever live together, we have to get a Great Dane or not a Great Dane, she's going to kill me now if she ever listens to this. What's the one with the Greyhound?
Greyhound?
Yeah, those are big old dogs.
They're very big. Yeah, you need to have a good spacious place for that.
Yeah, and I can't imagine having two of those things.
No, definitely not. Sometimes I see people with like a Siberian Husky in my apartment building in LA. I'm like, I know how big our apartments are. Like, that dog has got to be somewhat miserable.
I know. I would always feel guilty about that. But one thing, too, I thought, because you've done a lot with with Roast Battle,
mm-hmm.
too, this past year especially.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, because, like, I think it's a weird... There's definitely... Okay, so on the surface level, obviously, you're, like, shitting on whoever you're battling against. The best... The best battles are like cut deep.
Oh yeah,
you know, and it's an interesting thing because you have on this one hand you have this like it goes beyond what 99% of people would be comfortable with dealing with themselves.
Yeah,
even a lot of comedians, it's very tough sometimes to take like that level of like personal insults.
Yeah,
but then. You are such a loving person. Then we have Crave, right?
It's kind of... My girlfriend asked me recently if the awesome person recognition posts are a direct result of me feeling bad about what I do in Roast Battle. And it's not... The thing is, I love... that Roast Battle has become the thing that people know me for, because if you don't know me, people are like, that guy's a dick. Oh my God. Like people see me be so mean, and be so good at being mean. But then the people that know me are like, no, he just knows how to write those jokes and he's a loving person. And he's just like, that's just what he's good at. But for me personally, it's cathartic to do it because honestly, when you're being positive all the time, like I'm a comedian, I think of terrible things.
Yeah.
I have very dark thoughts all the time.
Yeah.
And I need a place for them to go. I need a place for them to come out. And Roast Battle has become my therapeutic outlet to be like, okay, dark thoughts, here we go. And now I have a platform where people are asking me to release them.
Yeah.
And so anytime I do it, it's just like the next day or like even like for the next week, I feel like I gave birth. Like I'm just like, oh, like, sorry, ladies. I know it's not the same. If you've given birth and you're listening to this, I know it's not the same. But it really like it's become like this way for me to just release any negative energy that's in my body. Like,
yeah.
Just get it out. And then I think that's why I'm so good at it.
It's like alchemy. It's taking this dark matter that, I mean, I think all humans have it.
And yeah, for sure.
It's like comedians, we have learned to translate it and judge ourselves less for having it because we can create something, a positive good out of it, a laugh.
Yeah.
Right?
And the other thing is like, it's taught me to just completely open up myself to the world and be like, look, this is me. Say whatever you want about me. I can handle it. Like, and that didn't used to be the case. Like, I used to really, I hated myself for many, many years. I was angry and just like very depressed. And like the first time I did Roast Battle, I told myself, whatever this guy says, you already know it. So don't worry about it. You already know it. But then when I did the show, it's not what you know. It's when 100 people realize it and start laughing at you.
Ooh.
And that's the thing about Roast Battle. They're laughing at you.
Ooh.
And you need to be able to you need to know that. Like, it's different than silence. Like, silence, if you're just not doing well, you're like, well, I guess they're listening. They don't really care. But no, they're laughing at you. And there's a power in that of just saying, guys, I'm fine. Go ahead. I'm good. Just say whatever you want about me. And so people have said horrific jokes about me, but I've come to love hearing what they have to say. Because especially I'm 15 battles in, like, what are you going to say? Like, you have to be the most creative person at this point to make fun of me. So I get super excited about it. And it's really like, people think Roast Battle is hate-filled, and it's the exact opposite. No, we're saying, look, we're going to open ourselves up to you right now, and we're not afraid to just show you who we are, and at the end, you do have to hug. Like, that's one of the rules, and I'm friends with everyone I've ever roast battled.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just, at the end of it, I'm like, I've spent 3 weeks thinking about them nonstop. I have no other choice but to be like, hey, like, you're in my circle now.
Yeah.
And I do, every time I roast battle, I write an awesome person post that same day about the person I'm about to eviscerate on stage.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of speaks to, like, even at large, the sort of ethos of the Comedy Store. I feel like one of the things that defines them, and I'm somebody who's, I'm not super, heavily involved in that scene as other people, but I know I like visiting there and hanging out sometimes.
Yeah,
but
it's fun.
It is one of those places where I think it's maybe arguably the, more than any comedy club in America, like a place where being an honest asshole is a welcomed thing.
Because
like honesty is really held at the highest level.
It is, you know, and the thing is that for years, when I first started comedy, I've been doing comedy, it'll be 8 years in March. So like, you know, so a while. I mean, the Comedy Store had very negative energy and people told me like I would go there and I wouldn't feel welcomed at all and all that. And I think for a lot of the people that I started with, it still has that stigma to it.
Mm-hmm.
But what people don't realize is like shows like Roast Battle have really turned it around. And the people that work there now, they don't just want to shit all over you. Like, we do everything there. It's very positive to be there now.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why all the best people are going back there and why it's become Mecca again for comedians is because it just doesn't have that. Like, it used to be you would go to the open mic and they'd be like, well, that guy fucking sucks. How do we get him to quit? And it's like, geez, like, I'm 3 weeks into this, man. Like,
yeah.
Calm down.
It's like, one of the things... I don't know. I think a lot about weird, unexpected ways that love can manifest itself and how everybody thinks love has to be only like this one straight line, sort of like straightforward sense of like love, positivity, pat people on the back type of thing. But there is a love to honesty. There is a love to being wedded to truth. And but I think that's also, it can be dangerous too, because I was so guilty of this, as guilty as anybody, of having really bad energy. And I still sometimes have bad energy on stage and just bad juju. I kind of let the darkness take over versus like, but it's so important to me nowadays just to use a simple mantra of just like reminding myself love, 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 like before I get on stage. So that no matter what I say, you can say the darkest shit, but if you, there's like a subtle, unspoken, like subconscious thing that we feel if there's some love deep down beneath that. If it's not really malicious, it's in the name of having a good time or just, you know, promoting.
I think that's how you get away with things. You know, that's how you really like invoke an audience to just let themselves go. Is that they have to establish that trust with you, and they have to know that you're not coming, like you said, from a malicious place. You're just showing, like, sometimes I'll say a joke that is really progressive in thought, and if the audience doesn't go with me, it's because, okay, I did that too early. Like, they couldn't, I only had 10 minutes in the set. They didn't trust me enough for me to be able to tell them this. But when you do longer sets and you build rapport, and when you start building a fan base so people are there to see you, like, you know, that's all you're looking for as a comedian, is you're just looking for the people who you want to perform for.
Yeah.
I was really lucky this year where I got to do a couple music festivals, like, but do comedy at the festival. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like, this is 150 people who are exactly like me. Like, you're exactly what I, and then the sets would just be great because I'm like, you're my fans. Like, you're not some 60-year-old guy in a suit that's having date night with his wife for the first time in 4 years. That's coming out like, I'm here to say a political joke, blah, blah, blah. Like, no, you're here like for the same reason I'm here, because we're at this festival together. Like, clearly we're looking for the same things.
Yeah.
And you know, when you get people to trust you, you can really just get them to go anywhere.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm kind of, that's kind of like what Crave is about, is like, look, just come with us, trust yourself and trust us, and we're gonna show you a good time and a great group of people. There's nothing I love more than after we did our Crave in the Desert 3 weeks ago, my friend hit me up a couple days later and was like, hey, do you know these two girls? And I was like, yeah, kind of. They're better friends with my friend Mike, who's my co-producer. He's like, oh, well, we met each other at Crave and we're gonna have Friendsgiving together. And I was like, whoa, like 4 days after you met, you're just gonna, they're inviting you over for Thanksgiving? He's like, yeah. And I was like, that's the best. Like, that's what we want. That's all we want, is for people just open themselves up to each other and just being like, hey, we all just want to be happy, man.
Totally.
That's all we want to do. Like, and so I just want to provide an outlet for people to have fun.
Yeah. Wait, were you big into music festivals before you did comedy? Were you always like a music guy?
I mean, I've always loved going to concerts. I've always gone to tons of concerts and stuff like that, but I never went to a lot of festivals. Because on the East Coast where I grew up, they just don't really, they're just not that, there are now.
Yeah.
It's as the festival boom has happened, there are now. But growing up, there wasn't a ton of festivals I could go to.
It was like Bonnaroo, and that was it.
Yeah, and then so I went to Coachella in 2011, and I was like, oh, this is the most fun thing ever. And then it was all because, like, this group of friends that I made, I met this huge group of friends at an LCD Sound System concert. I was with my friends and they were right next to us in the seats, and we just merged as friend groups, and they were like, well, these are the things that we do. We go to these festivals, we go to these. And I was like, oh, okay.
Tight.
And then it started opening me up to be like, oh, you can do whatever you want. Because then when you go, like, I still love Coachella, but when you move away from that to the more, as they call them, transformational festivals, but just ones that are more about, like, arts and just expression and things like that, I'm like, oh, like, you can do whatever you want. And when I started applying that to comedy and things like Crave, it's just like, yeah, just show people a different side of things. You don't have to fit into any box, and there's no mold for you to become a stand-up comedian. There's no way to do it.
Yeah.
Just do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And when you have that realization that you can do whatever you want to do, like, your brain just literally just, oh, it's like a flower just blossomed in there. And it's like, here I am, and here's my beauty for all the world to see.
It's so cool. And it's so important to be around people who are doing that. And I think that's how we get most directly inspired, at least I do, is like just being around people who are manifesting their dreams. That's why I think it was important for me. And I moved from North Carolina to LA. And it's just LA, New York. I think at the end of the day, it's like so important. You know, this, you could do this in your own city, whatever.
Sure. It's happening more and more.
But like, you gotta be I feel like artists need to be around artists. You need to be inspired by people who are just living authentically, or else you're not. You know, it's hard to generate that completely on your own.
I tell everyone that who disses LA, because LA has all its haters. You know what I mean? Of course it does. You know, obviously, people that haven't been here, haven't lived here, they have their idea of what it is, and to them, that will always be right. And what those people don't understand is that if you want to do something creative, or even just if you want to do anything, people come to LA with drive and purpose because they think they need to do it here because they couldn't get it done from wherever they were from.
Yeah.
And so you're amongst thousands upon millions of people who all came here with this purpose, and they're one thing that they know what that they think they can do, and then they find other people that can help them do it, and these beautiful communities sprout because this is the place where they knew they could do it.
Yeah.
And so people in LA are motivated, and the people that come here and they're just like, and it's not for them, cool. It's not for you. You don't have to be here anymore.
Right.
It's not the 1980s where that you had to come here to make it. You don't have to come here.
No.
But if you do, and you embrace the people, the community that you find, and the artistic endeavors that you know you want to just put forth, you're gonna succeed here.
Yeah.
You really will. As long as you, I fully believe that you will succeed here if you work hard and you're nice to people and you just wait long enough.
Mm-hmm.
It is a waiting game. And if I realized this year, I was like, okay, Alex, you're not going to make it. The shortcuts aren't there. You're not going to, you know, when you're three
right.
years in and you do the meltdown show, you're like, cool, I'm going to be on my own by the time I'm 6 years in, quit my job and living off comedy. Nope. Still not doing that. It's going to take 10 years.
Yeah.
Like everyone told me it would. I wanted to not believe them. And I wanted to say, no, I can do it in six.
Uh-huh.
No, I can't.
Yeah.
So who cares? I started, you know, appreciating things this year and all that. This is the most fun. And I'm so lucky that I get to do this. I get to be on stage with the people that I looked at as children, as a child, and just being like, we're on the same show together.
That's so
this
cool.
This is nuts, right?
Yeah.
And like, if you ever, my friend Craig Gass told me this year, who I open for sometimes, he was like, Alex, comedy is a hobby. And if you ever get to do it for any reason beyond that, that's amazing. But at first and foremost, it is a hobby, and you do it because you love it.
Yeah.
And if you take the financial aspect out of it, you'll just succeed because you love it.
Totally.
And I loved when he told me that, when he just said it like that, I was like, you're right. He's like, it shouldn't be a job. It's not a job. It is. It will be, but it's not.
Right. I mean, one thing for me, I like, sometimes I have to remind myself, like, whenever, because I've gone through phases. This was more a couple years ago than it is now, because I feel like I'm now starting to become, and through being able to have a podcast has helped me become more honest, both on air and then translating to being more honest on stage than I have been all the time. But one thing I just came to a realization a couple years ago was, like, you know, honestly, the job, the financial aspect of a job of a comedian, it's not, that part is not good enough to do it unless you are being authentic, unless you get to be your real self. Like, what's the point of, like, cult, like, you know, like 80s style, 90s style, maybe for some people, they would like create whole characters or create like a whole different persona, a totally false persona that's not really based on what their true opinions are, what their true beliefs are.
Sure.
Some people still do that. And I guess less and less now, because it feels like it rings falser now. We have a more direct like communication with people through social media and stuff. We can kind of like feel through that a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I just feel like it's not, for me personally, there's no point, like, why even, like, you're just creating, if, especially if a lot of us, we hate like corporate America, like we hate the idea of like trying to fit into that box. I mean, then you're just like putting yourself in your own other little prison of like, I have to be somebody I'm not on stage. And then what's the fucking point? What's the joy in doing that?
You know? I mean, I think, you know, your first few years in comedy, you emulate what others are doing, what your favorite people do, because you don't know any better and you don't know how to do this.
Just
right?
Desperate for laughs.
You just look at other people and you go, okay, maybe I'll try that style.
Yeah,
like, that's who I like. So that's what I'll do. And then as time goes on and you try enough things and you start to really trust yourself and you believe in yourself, then you start to be like, no, what do I want to put out into the world? What message do I want to put? And who do I want to be up here? Who do I want to be in life? And like, I had this, like, a couple weeks ago, I did a roast battle in this crazy festival outfit that I wear with, it's like a metallic skin tight romper with fur on the hood and wrists. And I wore leggings.
Metallic skin tight romper.
Yes.
You had me at that.
And I wore a glow in the dark tail. And it's something that I wore for Halloween when I went to see Fish in Vegas. And I was out in the desert doing for our Crave camp out. And I was like, I want to wear this on stage. I want to have enough people behind me that if I wore this on stage, they wouldn't think, what a fucking weirdo. They'd be like, fuck yeah, Alex, you get that, dude. Like, wear whatever you want. Like, we're here, man.
Yeah.
And then I just realized, like, I could do this in a roast battle. Like, this is like, it's like, it's a circus of a show. It's like professional wrestling. I can just wear this thing and just battle as I want to be. And all these people were kind of like, you know, after the battle, which I won in this character doing this weird voice and everything. And I had the most fun I've ever had on stage. And people were, and some people were like, Alex, that wasn't fair. Like, you weren't bat. He wasn't expecting to battle this goblin thing. He was expecting to battle you. And I told them, and they kind of didn't believe me. I was like, honestly, that's much closer to who I am than I've ever battled with before. Because before, when I would battle, I would be aggressive and I'd turn into this, like, this amalgamation of all the dark parts of me. And I was like, this is not me.
Yeah.
This is not a representation of me. When I put on this stupid, like, animal suit and just was flipping a glow in the dark tail around as I performed, I was like, this is much closer to me. As much as you guys think, like, what a fucking weirdo, like, I can't believe you did that at the Comedy Store, it's like, no, that's me saying, this is who I am, and this is what I want to do. This is who I want to be. I want to be this whimsical Dr. Seuss-esque character, and if that's what I want to do, I'm going to do it. And it was such an eye-opening moment of, Alex, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Like, as long as you're smart about it, you can do whatever you want, and I'm gonna continue to do whatever I want.
Dude, that's so cool. Have there been any, as far as, like, I don't know, are you into, like, Buddhism, or do you practice anything, like, outside of comedy off stage that's, like, you deliberately know, towards cultivating positivity?
I really don't. Like, I listen to a lot of podcasts where they talk a lot about, like, you know, like Ram Dass and Alan Watts. Alan Watts book right here.
I gave away my copy of Be Here Now to somebody.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I listen to all that stuff and I really like a lot of the philosophies behind all of it.
Yeah.
But I've never seeked out actually reading books on, like, theology and things like that and philosophy. Although anytime I hear about it, I'm always like, I should just start reading this stuff, because I have all these thoughts anyway about, like, non-judgment and just togetherness and community and all the things of just, like, how to just really hone in on who you are as a person. And I think that's what a lot of this year has been for me, is like, the less I knew about a person that I was writing about, like, for an awesome person post, the more I infused myself, my own story and my own beliefs into it. Like, they really got to a point of, like, they're almost like, they're just, if you read all of them, you would know completely who I am as a person, because they turned into, like, these inspirational things that I just believe in and just idealisms. And I think, like, I want to start going harder and deeper into actual, like, philosophical, like, books and readings that I can really be, like, just improve my knowledge set.
Yeah. Well, Alan Watts, I mean, I like his books a lot. It's hard to improve upon, like, that sweet British voice. Mm-hmm. Just the most soothing sounds. I was reading more a couple years ago than I have now. I mean, like, it's just time consuming to read.
And for, sure.
Especially if we have, like, a lot of, like, ADD type attention, like, we're in, especially nowadays when you're checking social media all the time, all that shit. It's like, it's so hard for me to concentrate.
Yeah. But books, what are those?
Yeah. Books. But, so have you ever gotten into meditating or anything like that?
You know, I've tried.
yeah.
I'm not good at sitting still for long periods of time.
Well, you seem like an extrovert.
I'm definitely extrovert. I'm very extroverted.
Yeah.
But that's why I like to have time to myself where I can just go in, like, go and deep inside and just kind of just really just, like, chill. And I'm okay being by myself. Like, as much as I'd rather be around other people, I am totally okay being by myself. But anytime I try to meditate, I'm just like... my brain, it goes too fast, and I've never been able to slow it down. And because I fully accept, like, I didn't used to think I have ADD. I definitely do now. Whether the digital age has influenced that or not, and I think a lot of it has. Like, yeah. You know, I'm always checking my phone and doing all the other dumb, who validated me now?
Exactly, yeah.
But, like, it sucks. I hate that I do it, but I do it. Like, and if I wasn't, I never wanted to be on Facebook. And when I became a comedian, my friends were like, the other comedians were like, you have to get Facebook, Alex. You can't be a comedian and not be on Facebook. Uh-huh. And like everyone else, I got fucking addicted to it. I got addicted to just What's everybody doing?
Right.
You know?
The comparison engine just going off and off, like, oh, that person's getting that. Oh, that person's successful, and I'm thinking of my own deficits all the time.
Yeah. It's hard to not get wrapped up in it. And, I mean, I'm going to be on Facebook a lot less after this year. Like, I keep telling people, nobody can wait for this year to end faster than me. But it really, I want to be able to just explore myself more and really, like, I mean, I've learned so much about myself this year, about what I want as a person and what I want to give to the world. I think like I've learned, I don't know exactly who I am yet. And I really don't know what I'm going to be, but I'm especially after this year specifically, I'm really excited to find out like how far my brain will allow me to go and what other gifts I can instill on the world. Like, cause that's really all I want, is for people around me to smile. That's all I want. I don't want people to be, you know, I want you to be a happy person when you're around me. And you know, I'm sympathetic and I'm empathetic. And when bad things happen, I want to be there for people. And I'm not like some kind of just like, oh, your mother died, but don't worry, cause the sun's out today. Like, I'm not that. Like, but like, I try to make people just feel better about themselves. And a lot of it's my girlfriend for just really believing in me, but just a group of people came together and showed me that whoever you are is okay. Like, it's just be yourself and it's fine. And we love that, and just go as far as you want to go. And the further I've gone, the more I've liked it.
Yeah.
Like, I've had a few times this year, like when I put on, like when I saw Fish, I said, I wasn't prepared for how much I would like this. When I put on that metallic romper and it was skin tight and I was running around a festival, like practically nude, I was like, I wasn't prepared for how much I would like this. And as I keep diving into things that are new and experimental, I'm finding the things that I like, and it's really exciting, and I can't wait to see like what else is out there.
Totally, man. And thinking back to, talking about social media, I was just talking about talking about this with my girlfriend last night too, because I just signed up for Instagram finally this week.
Yeah,
it was like the first time. It's been years and years.
I only did it like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But it was shocking me because people would again, speaking of Facebook posts that I sought validation for, I mean, I made a post on Facebook about like how people had always talked. I've only heard of people like mocking it or making fun of it, or like the filters, or like people posting food and selfies and shit like that. But I joined it. It's like, by far for me, the most positive like social media of all of them.
It really is. It's a lot of people just like sitting at a sunset going like, I hope I continue this into the new year and stuff like that. And as cheesy as a lot of it is, like, I've grown to accept that, you know, cheesiness and positivity is okay.
It has a place.
I'm okay being the person, like being a comedian that, you know, I'm not ignorant to what's going on, but when people are like, the world is ending, I'm like, okay, maybe, but you can still keep existing and keep improving it in your little way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's always going to be bad shit happening.
Totally.
There's always going to be bad. And the thing is it's our job as comedians to show people the good,
right?
You know, to show people we are supposed to be positive, even when we're being negative. We're doing it to be positive, so you start thinking positively.
Exactly,
and that is our job as comedians.
And that's like one of the hardest part of climbing out of like the open mic system is that, at least for me, I felt like when I was my entire world, it was just we're all amateur comedians, so we're not good at it. We probably are not where we want to be in our careers. We cheat towards negativity. We don't understand, like, we're insecure in our own like performance abilities. We're not confident in all these things, and that describes me to a fucking T. But like, and so you're just constantly around, like, and then that has this whole culture of like mocking any kind of like any kind of sincerity, any kind of like actual like try, like, oh, how dare somebody try to be genuinely positive or happy? Yeah. It is so corrosive to you, and it was to me in my spirit for a while.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, I have learned that when you're positive every single day, you learn who doesn't like that. As much as you learn the people that support it and appreciate it and are like, thank you for being this person that's doing this, somebody needs to call to say it. I have also found the people that are like, fuck you, man. We don't need this shit.
I mean, I was one of those assholes too for a while. It's just, it feels like, I don't know, maybe I let myself sort of adopt too much, or maybe that's all projection of what I thought people wanted, you know, just trying to play into what I thought would be successful, would be like the, you know, the funny cunty guy, but like nobody wants the cunty guy at the end of the day.
A few people do, but a lot more don't. Want something that they can really believe in, I think.
Yeah.
And I think if you give them, some people have argued whether or not what I'm doing is like genuine. And I know it's genuine because I smoke a lot of weed, and every time I do a post and then like I'll get high like an hour later, I'll like go, oh, that was really stupid, wasn't it? Oh God, well, you're really putting yourself, why would you do, Alex, why are you, maybe people don't want to learn about themselves through you. Maybe you don't, they don't want to know how you view them. Maybe they don't need to know these things. Like, and then like, that's how I know it's genuine, is because I second guess it all the time. I don't just throw it out there and go, oh, there, I'm done my good deeds for the day. Like, mm-hmm. I throw it out there and then I go like, I really hope this person is okay with the things that I wrote and me basically putting them on a pedestal for a day and showing like, hey, I love this person and this is what I see when I look at them and I hope they're okay reading it. Because, you know, sometimes like I try to be really positive in them, but sometimes like I'm very honest in them as well. And sometimes I'll say like something that I fully believe about them that they could maybe like, that they might not even realize about themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of like, oh, is this okay? Is this okay? And then in the end, I'm just like, they'll tell me if I've never gotten a post that said, take that down. You know, I've never gotten a message that was like, I don't want this out there.
Yeah.
In the end, when people start realizing and they get all the other clicks from other people that they know and stuff like that, my favorite, like, I've gotten messages from people's parents this year that are like, I didn't know what my son or daughter was really doing in LA. Like, we talk, but they don't open themselves up. And to know that they're having an impact on people, and to see something like this, and then like when I see a family member or a friend that I don't know share the post and all that, like, yeah, like I knew this person was doing, that's the best. Like, I know that I'm doing something real and good for the community and these people.
Yeah.
And just like, everyone deserves to feel good about themselves every once in a while.
Totally.
Like, you really do. And like, it's just, you know, it's been really beautiful to see people like embrace it and comment on the post and just talk about why they love the person so much.
Yeah.
It's just really cool to just like, it's, you know, when you stop thinking of comedy as a competition, like, oh, that person got that, that means I can't have that. And you start going, no, we are all in this together and we're going to pull each other up little by little as we do well. We're all going to pull each other up. That's why you don't see comedians that are 14 years in that aren't working, because all of their friends, even if they weren't getting the direct opportunity, all their friends were like, no, we know this guy's great. Give him a job. Like, he's going to write on this. And yeah, that's why I know, like, we'll all be fine. We'll all be fine if we don't quit.
Yeah. And I, you know, fear is such a great indicator. I've heard so many people talk about it over the years. It's something I still have to constantly remind myself of, to like follow the fear. Like, some fear can be something that if you give into it and you don't, and you like succumb to the fear, then it's a reinforcing cycle where it's just, you feel bad because you know in your deepest down that like, I'm not doing what I need to be doing on some level. I'm not fully living my potential, or I'm not fucking going for it.
Yeah.
I think that was a big impulse for me to like move to LA in the first place.
How long have you been here?
5 years.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, but then I took a year off from doing comedy because of like the whole negativity of the mic scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of disappeared off the map for a lot of people. I did 6 months in Raleigh, but it basically started here.
Yeah.
Yeah. When fear can, for me, fear was a, like following the fear was, in a way, fear of like what would happen if I took a year off, like if I stopped doing stand-up. I was like terrified. I was like, I'm not enjoying this process. I really wasn't. It wasn't like one of the things where I'm bombing sometimes, but like, you know, it's all in fun. Like, I was really becoming a negative person. I didn't like the person I was becoming. So I was like, what would happen if I took a year off? Now, ultimately, I came back to it because I still loved it and I still saw the potential of it. And I could remember some bright, beautiful times when I was starting off earlier.
Yeah.
But like Miles Davis talks about it a lot, and like fear being something where, like he said, like, and I listened to his autobiography, which is, well, it's a voice actor because he's long since passed.
Sure.
And it's like a fake Miles Davis doing like his raspy, like,
that's kind of funny.
Yeah. I had to tell myself I had to follow the fear. Like, but like you forget that's a fake Miles Davis after a while.
Listen to it.
It's great. It's fascinating. Speaking of assholes, he was pretty much an asshole, but also very authentic in his art. Anyway, he talks about like this event when he was like a kid, like, and kind of the stove, right? It's a classic like hand on the stove, but like he knew from that point he had to dive into his fear. And I see that that you're just, to bring it back to the social media being genuine, that can be so, it's so fearful to be sometimes, to be a positive person, to be a genuine person.
Yeah.
You know, especially when people want to just go rah-rah, like, I mean, I really don't want to talk about politics specifically, but that's what happens all the time in politics. People are like, it's supporting each other's like negativity, and I get it because like it's a scary ass world. There's some crazy shit happening right now.
Yeah,
but it's weird. Again, I don't know. I tend to, and part of this is like my own family kind of background. My dad is a pastor, and so like we have like a big peacemaker type vibe. Anyway, sometimes to a fault, we don't want conflict, and so I really want to play. I'm like, I want to play the compassion angle, but people are not really into the compassion angle right now politically. And I get it.
Yeah, it's tough. Because this whole, I mean, the whole election became about battling instead of solutions. It became about it was total mudsling. It was totally, well, I'm better than this person, but never actually saying it. That's why, you know, that's why we ended up with Trump, is because he was a better mudslinger. And at one point I literally, I was watching him do a debate, and I looked at my girlfriend, and I was like, I know why he's winning right now. And she's like, why? And I was like, because he's doing what I do in roast battles. He's belittling and he's cutting them off and he's going, no, no, no. And then he would talk louder, and then it would just make you go, oh, he's right. He's talking louder. He's got the point. That's literally the way I was doing it in battles and winning. And I was like, oh my God. And that's what made me really go, I have to change the way I roast battle. I have to be some silly character and some whimsical creature instead of this aggressive thing.
Yeah.
Because that really scared me. But yeah, it really, like, it's, you know, going back to the thing you said about fear, it's like, it's, you have to be fearful of everything you do as a comedian. And if you're not scared of it, you know, then it's probably not going to, you're not going to get that much out of it. You know, whenever you do something new and it works, it's so much more, it's endlessly satisfying.
Yes,
you know, you can go up and do a 45-minute set of all the jokes you know work, and you walk off stage going like, all right, that was great, I feel really good. But if you had even one moment in there where you went off the cuff and you took a situation and you responded to the nuance of the room, that's the moment when you're going to walk away going, that moment.
Yes.
That the unexpected, where I handled it because I've done this long enough that I knew what to do. And sometimes, you know, I'll try something on stage that doesn't work, and I'll just be like, well, at least tried it. You know?
Yeah, and at least I was present, you know?
Yeah.
And at least, I mean, that's, for me, I constantly am like, I get tired of jokes very quickly for the most part. They have, you know, there's a reason old jokes, like, we keep them around, because they have a purpose, they have utility. People also, I have to remind myself, like, most people that I do comedy for haven't heard me do these bits. So it's not, like, sometimes I would be like, oh man, I know this, like, I know this person's going to be here and they've already heard me do this bit. So I'd be like, oh, I don't want them to hear me do that. I'm like, but I never judge people for that. Like, I never judge people for doing a bit I love hearing them do.
Yeah, we have to. I mean, if you go to this, if you get in a rhythm and you start going to the same open mic every week and a lot of the same people show up and you start to develop, it's a support group basically. Look, I'm trying this stuff, but you got to keep working on the joke. And so even though, you know, they've heard it, you still, you know, hopefully they're giving you the respect that, like, look, we know we've heard this, let's hear what you've done to it and hear how you've improved it. You know, hopefully you're not just going up there for 6 months with the exact same 3 minutes and just like, okay,
right.
But yeah, I mean, it just, you know, in just embracing fear is so important. And I'm terrified every time I get on stage, whether I'm performing for 3 people or 1,000. I am mortified before I get on stage. I'm pacing, I'm scratching my head, I'm like rubbing my eyes, I'm just like, and then I love that feeling, because I once, Ozzy Osbourne had this quote where he said, like, he said, do you still get nervous? He's like, of course I get nervous, because I fucking care. And yeah, like that to me is like, yes, yeah. Like if you, I watched a guy once, I was opening, I was in a club in Arizona, and he's like, do you get nervous? I was like, yeah. He's like, I don't get nervous. And I was like, really? He's like, nope, I never got nervous. And then he went on stage and ate shit.
Mm.
And ate shit. And I, well, he walked back off stage. I was like, you weren't nervous about that? I would have been pretty nervous about exactly that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I go up there, my trepidatious, terrified little self, and I use that energy to just come out of me as a performer.
Yeah.
And then I'm better off.
Totally. And for me, when I, my worst sets are usually when I feel nervous, and I feel nervous every time too, but then my best sets are when I channel that nervous energy into like that positive sort of like, there's a direct connection, and all of a sudden when you're off the races, then like anything, that zone where it's like, I could say anything and it's going to work.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever talked to your dad about like, about how him being a pastor, like is very similar? Like,
cause obviously
you are, what you want is you want a cohesive unit in the room, but you're leading the cohesive unit. You're saying, this is where the train's going. This is where I want the feelings to go. And your dad is doing the exact same thing
totally
as a pastor, except instead of talking about his dick, he's talking about the Lord.
So
it's, you know, very, very similar.
Yeah. But, and then for me, it's like the worst sets I have too are like, I feel that nervousness, but then I just kind of succumb to it. And I just sort of like let my, it makes me less confident, and I'm not open in some way. I'm not saying you have to like talk about being nervous every time, because then that's sort of like ruins a set in its own way if you're like always shitting on yourself and how unconfident you are. But like, there's a, I guess if you try too hard to be guarded off and to wall yourself, to be like, all right, I feel nervous, so I'm gonna protect myself, I'm not gonna be direct and open, then those are usually my worst sets.
Yeah,
because there's just a lack of connection.
There's a definitive, every once in a while you go up and there's literally, you can literally see the invisible wall between you and the audience. Yeah. And there's you can hit it as hard as you want, and there's nothing you can do to break through it.
Yeah.
And those are the worst. You can't feel it. Like there's such a definitive energy when you're doing well or when you're being yourself on stage that you cannot replicate. No matter how hard you try, it's either there or it isn't. And if you don't make that instant connection, or the audience knows you're just doing an act or doing it rote or not, you're just kind of up there and you're not really being present, then they're never going to give you back what you really want.
Totally.
And you're going to walk off stage going like, what happened there? And if you listen to it, you can be like, well, it was me. Like it's always you. I mean, every once in a while it's the crowd, but basically it's always you. Don't put it on the crowd.
Well, there's always something, some way you could adapt yourself to connect with them. Sometimes it means throwing out all of your material altogether. Like for Tribal Cafe, that happens to me all the time. I'm not going to like do real shit.
When I watch somebody go up in a room of seven people and do jokes that they know work, I'm just like, why?
Yeah, because like, it's so not present. It's so not like, connecting to us.
Who cares? Like, we know you know those work. You're not going to feel good after this.
Yeah.
Like just go up there and let your brain really wander. I have this thing that I love to do when I'm in a bad situation of comedy, which happens a lot in LA, obviously. We have a lot of rooms that should never have comedy with very few audience members. And whenever I see a disaster, like where I watch comedians go up and nobody can connect, I have this bubble in my brain that goes off that just says, what would Rory Scovel do?
Anytime
I think that before I go on stage in a bad situation, I have the most fun.
Oh, that's great.
Go a little crazy on stage. I just be kind of wacky and let the room take me wherever it wants to go.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I do better. Like I'll just be just that much better. And I love, you know, Rory's one
he's
of those.
So great.
Yeah, he's just one of those comedians that just like is so cerebral, and is just, you never really know where he's gonna go with things.
Yep.
And he's so good at just playing with the crowd, and the stage is his playground.
Being silly as hell, and
like climbing up on top of things, and just like, and whenever I tell myself that, it really helps me to have a better set and be freer and looser on stage and not just go, okay, Alex, you know what jokes to do.
I'm going to steal that from you.
Oh, please. That's great. I encourage everyone to steal that knows who Rory Scovel is. And if you don't know who Rory Scovel is and you're listening to this, please look him up immediately.
Look him up right now.
And you will find and watch the clip where he's in a hotel and he has a wireless mic. So he takes an elevator to the top floor with the wireless mic. Please watch that. Or the set at Moon Tower when he climbs up the scaffolding in the middle.
Yep.
There's so many good examples of him just being a playful child.
Exactly. That's what, you know, I like his album a lot, especially his debut. I love it. I think some people listen to it, they don't get, because it's not, it's him doing his just material. You don't get the playful, crazy, anything can happen thing. So yeah, look up the hotel, like look up, then you get the idea of who that guy is. Also, one of the coolest people, some fucking no-name open micer when I met him. He's like, immediately, he was just like so like genuinely interested in talking to me, just as a person-to-person level.
It's people will tell you, but it's such a real thing. Like, watch how, like, more established comedians treat the people that are coming up, and you'll know whether or not they're a really good person or not.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I every once in a while, you, like, everyone has that feeling of, like, I'm further along than that person. I don't need to, like, and, like, sometimes it's okay to have feelings like that, because it's okay to have whatever feeling you want to have. But just understand that, like, you were there. We were all, when I watch somebody 3 weeks in up there just struggling, I'm like, I remember that, you know?
Yeah,
like,
it doesn't mean you have to book them on your show.
Right.
But like, you can be nice to them. You can be kind of, you can help them if they want help. You know?
And it's just a matter of like, you know, when you talk, you know, my whole thing is like, I don't get intimidated by famous people like, or anything like that, just because I've been around them for a long time. And it's just, I understand they're just people like us.
Right.
But there's this mutual respect that just like, of just, you know, not fanning out and treating them like a person, and then they treat you like a person.
Yep.
You know, like, I encourage everyone, like, you know, anytime I see someone take a selfie with like a famous comedian and they're like, look, I'm just like, like, be a peer, man.
Right.
Like, be a peer, not a fan. Like, it's okay to be, it's okay to, like, to love their work and tell them you love their work. But as soon as I see that, I'm like, you're, you know, like, I want to be treated the same.
Right. That's something a lot of people, we do with celebrities. They're an idea more than an actual person.
Yeah.
You know,
I got to meet January Jones at a party once, and she was someone who I was like, oh, you're a real person. Like, I've watched Mad Men for years, and I always thought you were just this, like, this skeletal woman, like, that I was in love with. Uh-huh. And so, like, I took a selfie with her, because I was like, my girlfriend's like, Alex, please don't. I was like, no, I have to. And I made the stupidest, I was like, January, and I put my arm around and made the stupidest face I possibly could, because I was like, I want to remember that I met this is a real person that I met, you know, and I just made it as goofy. Like, I didn't try to look good in it or anything. I wanted to look as stupid as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I love that we get to be around these people and we get to see, like, they're just people, man.
Yeah.
They're just people.
And the open micer is the negative asshole people that I sometimes rail against and get frustrated with. They're just people too. And they're exactly, I was the epitome of that at one point. So
I think we all were. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's so much experimentation and just unknowing when you start doing comedy. You have no idea what's going on. You've watched like stand up on stuff on TV, but you don't know what it's like to just go to an open mic and then be around these people that truly, for the most part, just don't give a shit about what you're doing up there.
Yeah.
And when you just let that go and be like, you know, I had one of my cousins tried to start comedy, and he went to an open mic. I was like, I'll tell you where to go. You know, you just go on your own. And he told me, he's like, nobody listened to each other. And at one point I turned to the two people behind me and I shushed them. And I was like, no. Oh God, you shushed them. Like, well, you can just kiss that stand-up career goodbye.
Yeah.
But because he just didn't. He's like, why don't they listen to? Don't we realize? Don't they realize they'd be so much further along if we all listened? I was like, yeah, sure. But who's got the time to listen?
Right,
like,
right. Yeah.
We're too wrapped up in ourselves.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah, it is weird. I've definitely bombed on stage sometimes with like, just from that moment where I let the indifference gets me, or I let like a heckle gets me, and then all of a sudden you just lose complete composure and control. It's just,
I mean, nothing more awful. Exciting to watch on stage than a meltdown, you know?
A total
meltdown. When you really watch it, God damn it! Do you know how hard I worked? Like, it's like, okay, here we go. Like,
oh,
I'm just like,
God.
Strap in, like, Here we go.
Hey, there's some truth in that meltdown, too.
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. I mean, at some point, you know, you have to have a somewhat of a meltdown on stage. Like, whether it's an actual, like, God damn it, or it's just you going, oh, my God, like, just breaking down internally.
Right.
Like, if you don't have that, you're doing something wrong.
Right. And then that's how you then get to have this, the sets when you're, like, you're nervous, but you don't. You just melt down and you, like, channel it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, every, you know, I've done thousands of open mics in the years I've done comedy and stuff like that. And anytime when I'm sitting in an open mic, I'm waiting 3 hours to do my 3 minutes. And it just, it seems like just like the end of the world where I'm just like, God, what do I do this for? Every time I do a really great show and I go, that's why I did it.
Yeah.
Like 1,000 open mics were of that were worth this 1 30-minute experience of mm-hmm. me getting to be on stage with this group of people and lead them in this, in, you know, the ceremony.
That's so beautiful, man.
It's, you know, it's that stupid fucking positivity.
stupid fucking positivity
that I've come to love so much. And it is real. Like, it is, I really have become this person, and sometimes even I hate it. Sometimes even I'm just like, shut the fuck up, Alex. Like, calm down with your holier than thou shit. And like, but in the end, I've realized, like, and I tell people this that are like, that want to start thinking more positively. I'm like, dude, it's better over here. It's just better over here. I used to look at people and go, you just don't even know, man. You're just ignorant to all right. the bullshit that's happening. Don't you know there's starving kids in the world making our phones? And I'm like, yeah, there are. But are you going to go over there and save it? Or do you just want to be over here going, well, what, you know, what can I do to be a better person in my daily life?
Yeah. I've definitely had that thought before too. And I think, one thing I like thinking about is that, like, truth, those people, they're like, oh, that person is living either ignorant, willfully ignorant, or there's blind. I'm like, truth is not inherently negative. Truth is not, and negativity is not inherently true either.
Right.
It's not the whole story of, and sometimes it's like shocking that, like, the truth that is behind love, that we are all, you know, beautiful beings put on this world. We're all cut from the same cloth at the end of the day. We're all just manifestations of a weird energy at some point. That's true too. That's, you know?
Yeah. That's the one thing I've always believed in is just that our energy begets whatever we deserve, basically. And when I was a negative person and nothing good was happening to me, it's because I wasn't fun to be around, and who would want to be? I didn't even want to be around myself,
exactly,
let alone other people want to be around me. And all of a sudden, when you turn it around and kind of just become a person who lives just in a total free state where they're, you know, they're not, it's not like you do whatever you want, like you can just drive a car on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah.
You obviously, you're smart about it, but that if you just kind of just let your creativity and your expression just really just fly and just go where it wants to go and just open your brain up to like whatever experiences you can get, like good things are going to happen because you're trying new things. It's not difficult, like, to understand once you really look at it, just like, you know, you put it on paper and just go, oh yeah, well, this makes sense. I'm being nice to people, so people are going to be nice to me and people are going to want me to do well.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know.
And it's not going to happen overnight where you go from completely negative to completely positive. Like, you can't,
no.
You're not going to be like a complete gear shift like that.
No, I mean, you know, how many times had I done hallucinogenics before I started crying over my dogs and talking to homeless people and realizing that everything's going to be okay? Like, a lot of times. But yeah. It was just that trip specifically that went, Alex, shut the fuck up this year. Stop complaining to people about things that you don't need to complain about.
Yeah.
Like, God, like, you know, I used to be like, you know, this sucks that I don't have a manager and I have a day job I have to go to. Oh yeah, that sucks so bad that you're employed enough to live your dreams, Alex. That fucking sucks, doesn't it? Like, you know, just like, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I had to tell myself, like, get out of your head, calm down, mm-hmm. and be appreciative of the beautiful things and the place you live in and the people around you and the things you get to do.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
just,
yeah. Well, that's what one of my favorite Ram Dass phrases is, the mind is a wonderful servant, but a terrible master.
No, I like that.
That we can use our minds to, as tools and to, like, accomplish things and things like that. But, like, that, the headspace is almost always what leads to negativity when you're constantly in the world of thoughts.
Yeah.
And it's so much simpler on the heart side. It's so much easier and so much simpler to just be like, you know what? I'm going to, the answer in every situation is going to have something to do with love and like feeling that loving energy.
Yeah. You'll be amazed what happens when you stop complaining about petty shit. I tell people that all the time.
Yeah.
When like, it's, oh man, these chicken fingers are dry. Okay.
Like, yeah. Wow.
Sorry, dude. Like, I guess, I guess move back to Montana and just go back to
those
being
wet
a
fingers. Like, those wet chicken
yeah,
fingers.
But it, like, you know, it's just like, yeah, okay, that's fine. Like any, but when I hear people just, it's just like, you can better your situation. You truly can.
Yeah.
And just like, and by being just, you know, I'm not saying that everybody should adapt what I did and just start thinking more positively about things, but like, just you make little changes here and there. And if you find these little things in your life that you go, I don't have to do that anymore. I don't have to be that person anymore. I don't, you know, it really will change you. And I mean, for me, this community of people that I found are really what did it to me. And that's why, like, I encourage people, like a lot of people that are like, oh, Crave, you know, I don't want to go. I don't like DJs. I don't like this. It's like, dude, Crave is just a party. It's just a party where awesome people come together to be awesome for 10 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't, you know, some people, if it's not your thing, it's not your thing. But I encourage anyone that's kind of like on the fence about it, just come and really see what it is. And you'll really, and you'll understand that it's just a bunch of people having fun together and just like liking being around each other.
Right on,
and,
man.
Yeah. Watching people make friends there and stuff like that. And just, it's just great.
Dude, I could talk to you forever. We're about out of time.
That's okay.
But
feelings mutual.
Man, this is such a great conversation. Where can people find you and find out about Crave?
Myself, hoopercomedy.com, hooper comedy.com, Crave. Cravecomedy.com, CRAVE. Do you know how to spell? CRAVE? Yeah.
I'll have the links to
Cravecomedy.com. I can't believe I've ever had trouble spelling that word. I only write it every day of my life. Cravecomedy.com. You can follow us at Crave Show, and me on my platforms is at Hooper Hair Puff. For those of you who can't see me, I have a lot of hair everywhere and never shave. And, yeah, I mean, I just, so yeah, we'll, if you want to sign up for Crave, we'll go to our website, sign up, and every couple months when we throw a party, we'll let you know where it's going to, like, how to find it, and come.
Sounds great, man. I'm gonna stop making excuses. I'm gonna come out to one.
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks so much, dude.
My pleasure. Thanks for being here.
And that's the show. Thanks so much to Alex Hooper. Go to Hooper Comedy or CraveComedy.com. Go to ChooseYourOwnReligion.com for more of this episode. Okay, I love you. Namaste.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?